You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Well, hello and welcome to the Indie Files, the bonus show here on the 602 Club, where we talk about adventures, name, Indiana Jones. I'm so excited to be back with you as we're talking about the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And with me on this exquisite journey is none other than Yancey Evans. Yancey, man, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Matt. Just back from another, I don't know whether you'd call it an adventure or not, into the trenches of World War I.
No, I think that one could rightly call this a descent into one of the rings of hell.
Yes.
And so if Dante had written his Divine Comedy, hell, what I think absolutely the trenches of World War I would have been one of the rings. Well, before we dive in, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts, over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all of those places. Help the show out by subscribing, as well as giving us star ratings and reviews. Let people know that you like the show. You can also find us over on social media. We're on X, Twitter, at the 602 Club. We would love it if you would follow us, interact with us there. Of course, we're on Instagram, at the 602 Club TFM. Got the entire network over on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And you can find us online at tfm.fan. That's our new website. So you can check out all that we're doing there on the network. And so, Yancey, this is another one of those episodes where, in many ways, the story takes place right after the other, in the sense of these two episodes that we're going to talk about tonight are well put together. So we have Sommer, early August 1916, and then we have Germany, mid-August 1916. And so, and these episodes very much play together well as the film, as it was edited, when they put it on DVD, Trenches of Hell. But at the same time, we're also talking about the way it was structured before that. And so, as we always do, I'm interested for the way in which they introduce this first episode, and especially the way in which the, you know, older Indie segment kind of links with the entire, you know, first episode here overall.
Yeah. And so these, I really like the openings, the bookends for both these episodes, because they kind of go together, like the episode in East Africa, the two part of that we went through earlier. So they go together very well. And what I really liked is the first bookends are really about Indy dealing with a kid who just is being rude to, just really rude to a customer. I mean, honestly, I felt like I had been seen in this episode, because I can't tell you, as an older man, how many times I've gone into a store, seen horrid customer service and maltreatment of customers at the hands of some young guy or young woman who just, they just act like they're above it all, and him quickly putting the young man in his place. But then in the second episode, that putting the man in his place and learning about responsibility and what actual difficulty is, results in him going to jail in the next episode, which is then about going to prison, prison camp in the war. So I really liked how these worked. They were kind of a nice way to introduce for younger audiences what we're going to be the general theme we're going to talk about. You know, there's not, you know, these ones in particular don't have any like depth to, they don't add any depth to the story. They just kind of touch on what the theme of each what the lesson of each episode is going to be about.
Yeah, I mean, I think They do kind of, I would say specifically, you know, the second episode's introduction with the old Indy and just him being in prison, you know, doesn't really necessarily add anything at all to the episode overall. There's nothing about it where it's kind of like, you know, trying to hit you over the head with the moral of the story or anything like that. It just legitimately is about him being in prison. And so he's telling a story about him having been in prison during World War One and of course escaping, which, you know, is fun for us and not so fun for the guys that he was in jail with, which is also kind of great, actually.
Yeah, because he gets his wish. He said, I'll be out of here in an hour. And sure enough, he's out of there in an hour.
Which is wonderful. And so, you know, definitely love that. I think that part's fun. You know, I think the best part about this is, though, that first bookend for the first episode actually does a great job of kind of setting up, you know, this kid, you know, thinks that his life is just so hard, and that he's so put upon and nobody understands him. And of course it's the plight of, you know, young age. And it's also, you know, it's such a me focused type of feeling that this kid has, and Indy's trying to help him understand, one, dude, you don't have it that bad. You have no idea what you're talking about. And two, let me tell you a story about having it really bad. And I like that. And it's interesting because I think it fits so well with the way in which, you know, George was so good at this, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, Star Wars, you know, had such meaning for him. He really wanted this to be something where he was teaching kids good morals, good lessons, you know. And I think that this is really a big part of that, right? This is a huge part of this episode specifically in the way that it's bookend, where, hey, you don't actually have it that bad. And the sad part is this kid actually doesn't learn anything, you know, by this story. And so I think that is one of the things that's actually it's not Indy's fault that he doesn't. But I think the other part about this is that, you know, that there's the way that Indy goes about this is just not the right way to do this, right?
No, definitely not.
You know, this is not conducive to actually teaching somebody a lesson that they need. So, you know, kind of moving away from that, and this first episode dealing with trench warfare, trench life, you know, the craziness of trying to take, you know, just 30 feet worth of real estate, and this whole movement in World War One, it's such a mess, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about how you thought that this episode did with just kind of portraying almost the futility of what's happening here in World War One.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it did a great job. If you really watch the first episode closely, they're given this objective to take this what used to be a chateau at the top of the hill, and they leave their trench. They eventually succeed in overrunning the initial trench, but then they get pushed back, and then they have to go again, and then they take the trench, and then they think they've overrun the chateau, and then they all, you know, then what happens at the end happens and everybody gets captured or killed. And that's the whole thing. When you really look at the history of World War One, especially on the front line, there's very little movement. Once the sides were dug in, entrenched, that was pretty much, where they were for a while. And in some cases, the lines never even moved for 3 years. So it was just this you know, almost needless conflict that just kept going on and on and on and sending more and more men into a meat grinder. It's interesting too, because the second episode kind of touches on that when he meets with the officers that are in the big prison camp, the maximum security one, and they're learning a lesson about medieval warfare. And Indy makes this quip that maybe you should be studying more about the American Civil War, you know, because that's the future of combat. And he's right in that regard. That was where everything went with technology. You couldn't leave people out in the open field. You had to move them into these trenches. And then, of course, that even changed by the time we got to World War II, because then it was armor and air power, quick-moving armor, too, not the slower stuff they had in World War I. And so, so soldiers would get overrun. They couldn't be in trench positions like that. They had to be more mobile. So the futility of it all and the horror of it all was incredibly well captured. You know, when the whole gas sequence is just like nightmare fuel when you see the Germans coming with their flamethrowers in this gas, you know, in this fog, this dense fog created by all this gas in the air. It's just, yeah, this episode did a really, really, really good job of portraying that.
Yeah, what I loved about this episode, and I thought was really well done, is the way in which, Indy's regiment of Belgium officers is put under the command of a French officer, because the Belgium regiment that Indy's with has lost all of their officers. They've all died in this one battle. They've just been extremely unlucky for the fact that all of them have died. And I think the hallmark of this episode for me, and maybe one of the most important aspects of it, was just to show the inherent racism between these different groups in Europe. And this intense nationalism that really hurts the efforts of the campaigns that they're a part of, because of the way in which even allies feel about one another. And, you know, I think that's something that's so interesting, because, you know, it is one of the things I believe that changed during World War II, is the way in which specifically you think of the American and British officers being able to work together. There was definitely a bit of a rivalry there during the war, right? The Americans, you know, wanted to outdo what the British were doing in like Africa and stuff like that, right? There's that aspect to it, but I don't think it had the intensity that we see here of the way in which these French officers feel about these Belgium officers and vice versa. And then, of course, you have Indy, who's stuck in the middle, who doesn't really feel that way about any of these people, right? You know, because to him, they're all just supposed to be on the same side. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of this episode for me, is the way in which it shows just the absolute kind of cluster that this whole war was from the bottom up. And we've seen that already play out in other episodes, you know, where we see the commanders who don't really care about the people that are under their command. And now we're seeing this aspect of the war where you have these people who are supposed to be on the same side, and yet they can't stop squabbling between themselves to actually create a cohesive unit. And that's kind of what this episode turns into, which is about these Belgium officers who are, you know, under Indy's command, and then, you know, these two French officers who come in, and these French officers having to lead in a way that earns these Belgium officers men's respect enough so that they can do the job that they've been given, which is, as we see, that, you know, I think that the overall title of the film that was created, The Trenches of Hell, I mean, and nothing could be more aptly named than what these men have to go through, which is a legitimate hell.
Yeah, and the other thing I really enjoyed about this episode is it, so, you know, obviously these episodes were shot, you know, all, you know, chronologically all over the, you know, not in the order they aired. They shot most of the World War I stuff all together. But what I really appreciate about this is about this episode too, is how it's kind of filling in a lot of what we didn't know. It's, you know, classic, Lucas, the Clone Wars. It's like, it's an earlier episode that we should have seen the consequences of this, because this is how Rennie is injured in the first season episode, you know, where he can't go on the front line anymore. This is these episodes are why Indy moves out of the, he moves from being just standard infantry and moves into more of a courier type position, because he wants to get out of this type of job because of specifically for this. And the other thing too that was real, I found really fascinating, is the scene where he and the French lieutenant are trying to take this machine gun nest, and Indy's rattled, which we haven't seen him that way in any of the other episodes, but that's because this is earlier in the timeline. So some of this stuff is still, you know, fresh to him. And so the officer is actually teaching him how to conduct himself under fire. And, you know, he needs to be more aware of his surroundings. He needs to be more aware of how he can help his men out to the best of his ability if he wants to succeed. And so he finds this way to, you know, he knocks down this tree and they're able to use it as cover to get to a position where they can throw these grenades to take out the machine gun nest. I really like that kind of stuff where it's kind of building this kind of backstory for Indy, which is really that this is the stuff that's right in my wheelhouse. So
I thought one of the other aspects of this, especially this first episode that's so well done, is the way in which it really, the production value of this, you know, I know a few of the scenes in here are clearly from other films that they're inserting into this. But everything that they do with the trenches, the taking of the chateau at the top of the hill, all of that looks superb. And, you know, just to be reminded that, you know, they are doing this on just this shoestring budget of a TV show. You know, Lucas is obviously putting all of his money behind us. He's doing a great job with it. And what they are able to accomplish with the amount of money that they have, I think, is astounding, because it still holds up. And, you know, I think you could put this up against many films that have come out about World War One, and this trench warfare looks just as legitimate and just as well done as, you know, what we have seen in other places. And so I love it. I think it's so well done.
Yeah, I think it's just a testament to the people he chose to direct. You know, like, this is Simon Winsor who did this episode, who had done a couple of the other World War One episodes as well. You have a great screenplay by Jeff Hensley, who then went on to, you know, do like Armageddon and Die Hard with a Vengeance and a few other films. He's got an uncredited role writing The Rock. That's a whole other story. But anyway, really talented screenwriter, top-notch production value, great actors. I mean, you can't say enough about the acting in these episodes. They're just, everybody from top to bottom is just bringing their A game in the performance. And I think that's all the stuff that when it works and comes together, the whole show gets to shine, you know. The second episode too, the actors, just fantastic actors. Incredible stuff, you know, and the editing, editing, music. It's you know, it's like watching a mini movie, you know, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I mean, again, it just does really kind of blow my mind at what they were able to create here for the show. And, you know, I think that I really enjoy getting to watch through this series just because it reminds me of what passionate people can do in creating television. I think of the lavish productions that we get with the Taylor Sheridan shows. And I think one of the reasons that is that you can tell he's incredibly passionate about the stories that he's telling, and he's putting every ounce of himself into them, right? He's putting every ounce of what he can production-wise into it to make every single episode that they produce in those, minus Marshalls, that's a whole other story, to look like you're watching it on the big screen, right? And I think... that's something that is just with this, you can just tell that everybody behind the scenes is working to make the best possible production they possibly can from story overall. And I think, that's incredibly beautiful, right? Like, and it's one of the things that just makes this show rewatchable even all of these years later. And it's something that, you know, they should be incredibly proud of. And, you know, I think that this story feels more poignant even now than before, because even when this show came out, you know, I think when you think of the middle class in the United States these days, and being raised in it, I think the kind of want for nothing is staggering, right? And I think this message of this episode of saying, hey, be reminded that you don't really have it that bad when you put it in perspective of what people your age had to do, you know, at this point over 100 years ago, right? We are over 100 years from what these people were doing in World War One, and yet look at what they had to do to make sure that, you know, we could live as we do now. And I think it becomes one of those incredible lessons of saying, hey, if you don't know history, you're not going to understand your own place in where you are and maybe why where you are isn't as bad. That is not to say that we don't, you know, can't still have hard lives and all those. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that this is one of those places where I think this show does such a great job of helping put where we are now in stark contrast and just in perspective, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's 100%. That's one of the reasons I really enjoy this show so much. It's just thematically what these episodes do. I keep going back to this, but it really is. It's kind of like George's precursor to the Clone Wars. You know, he's trying to impart the same lessons to kids. But, you know, this is before Star Wars. So he was using history as kind of like the gateway drug, as it were, instead of Star Wars. And, there's so many great things that come out of these episodes. Even the second one, there's a theme of perseverance. It's just not stopping, you know, just keep going. It's hysterical when, you know, some of these guys have tried to escape prison 5-6 times and they're going to keep trying, you know, they're not going to stop. And that, you know, that's one thing people aren't aware of. Most people aren't aware of, because, you know, not a lot of people anymore have served in the military, but you have an obligation as a soldier to facilitate an escape if you can, if it's feasible. So, you know, these guys took that seriously and kept trying to facilitate their own escapes over and over and over again. And regardless of the circumstances, regardless how daunting the task was ahead of them, they still try to find ways to make that happen. And so, this idea of I'd rather be back in the trenches going through hell than being imprisoned here. You know, that's something. because that's what was facing most of these guys, is they were just going to go back to the front or back to their units, wherever their units happened to be stationed. It wasn't like, oh, I get to go home now. You know, I got captured, right. So I go home now. So
right. Yeah.
They're boldly saying, I would rather face bullets and face death again than sit here and kind of fester away, you know? So that's another great lesson for kids too.
I like that you bring that up because I think because of where we are now, I think that issue is so much more poignant than it ever was, because the lack that most people have these days of perseverance, because everything tends to come too easy for most people these days. And so the moment that something hard happens, I feel like something's gone wrong. When in many ways, a lot of times, that's just life. You know, anything worth having is usually going to be hard to hard to get. You know, I'm not going to become a concert pianist overnight. If I love the piano and I want to be a concert pianist and I want to play at Carnegie Hall, the only way to do so is to spend years upon years upon years of hard labor to get me to that point. Even if I'm talented at it, right? It's still going to take that. And so I think, you know, that's something that has just kind of been lost, is that too many of us are too used to, and I include myself in this, to having things come too easily and forgetting that most things worth having take lots of work and sweat and toil. And that doesn't make them bad things either. It just makes them, you know, the way it works as a human being, to acquire, to learn, to grow, all of that tends to take hard work more often than not. And I think that's like you mentioning that about these men who, you know, are in prison and they're willing to do hard things to get themselves out of prison. They could just kind of sit back and hopefully wait for the war to end and hope that they'll then be returned, you know, back to their country of origin. But I think the other part of that is that makes that really interesting is I don't think any of them necessarily trusts, you know, the Germans specifically here to live up to their word to send them back when that happens. And so I think that's the other side of this, right? And it's a fascinating episode on that side, because looking at it from the, you know, the German perspective of these guys who think that they have them in this impenetrable, you know, fortress. And you know, we end up pulling out the Jack Sparrow / you know, isn't it the is it the Count of Monte Cristo where they do that too?
Yeah, they do that. Yeah.
So, you know, they pull out a very old trick to get oneself out of prison. And it works for the most part. Indiana is able to get away. I think that is.
And unfortunately,
just really,
Charles
really
de Gaulle goes back to prison. So,
yes. So,
yeah. And the other thing too, I really loved about the second episode too, is that, you know, you've had this really hard episode, and the second one, it's not light, but it's a little lighter, and it's more of an adventure, because it's like, okay, how's Andy going to get out of this? Because we all know he's going to get out of this, so it's kind of the way, how is this going to work out, you know? And And you initially think, oh, he's out once they get out of the first prison, you know, when he helps dig the tunnel and all the officers get out. But then he gets caught.
Yeah, The Great Escape.
It's The Great Escape. Yeah. But then he gets caught. And then, of course, because he took the name of another guy who was a frequent prison escapee, he gets sent to the maximum security prison on his first day of captivity. I just love the episode. It You know, I felt bad for the Russian guys who had made their little rope out of all this twine, and you know they tried to facilitate an escape.
And it almost works.
Almost worked, but they should have gone one at a time, not two at a time. That was a mistake. But just I just love that because it's just Indy in this different. He's in this kind of different realm where he's having to think a little differently and than he was in the previous episode, and it's. It's really good. And again, it's wonderful characters. I love the actor who plays Charles de Gaulle. He's fantastic. And the Germans are all nasty and just wonderfully villainous. So, as they should be.
When I heard Charles de Gaulle, all I could think of was We Didn't Start the Fire.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know, which is just fantastic. I think the interesting part about this, and I do kind of wish it, if there was anything for these two episodes that I do think that they lack a little bit, is I wish that there was more to the stories in the sense of, you know, the others that we've had in World War One have had some really, I think, key and important moral to the story aspects, right? And not that it's not there for these, but I don't think that they come across as powerfully as mm-hmm. those other episodes have.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think the first episode is certainly more powerful on a thematic level. This is actually more of an adventure than it is necessarily a...
Yes.
It's not so much an examination of prison life in World War One.
Exactly.
You know, it's more of it's an escape adventure. And I think it's appropriate, you know, for the follow up to what we had the first episode. But yeah, I could definitely see that though. It's not like there's a strong moral to the story in this other than, you know, always persevere and never quit. But
yeah, you know, never give up, never surrender. Give up,
never surrender. Exactly.
Yep. So, was there, with both of these episodes together, I do think, you know, when we talk about specifically the difference between the film version, you know, and the separate episodes, and we're covering these together because they really go together so well. It does almost play as an entire movie.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once it's edited together, it definitely has that sense even more so. And so I did want to ask you, is this one of the places where you do think that the re-editing of the episodes works better than it did to have them split apart?
Yeah, I do. I think there are a few episodes, and I think Lucas was already starting to get I think as we get later on into season two, especially, there's a lot more of this kind of thing, and the old indie kind of goes away, and the episodes just kind of flow into one another. So I think that was something that he did recognize, that there were, you know, there was a point at which old Indy had kind of served its purpose, and it was time to move on to more of a movie type situation where it was longer mm-hmm. form episodes and or two parters that just strung right into one another. And on some of those nights, they would have them as a special movie event, and then they just air separately, you know, for mm-hmm. syndication purposes. So, yeah, and it's definitely true. There's some episodes I think just work better edited together. It's just where it gets really clunky is when it's where it's really young Indy, and it's obvious that they had to bring back Corey to redo some stuff to tie stuff together, and he's clearly like 6 years older. He doesn't look like a young boy anymore. So those are the ones that are a little more like, but these ones work fine. And I watched both. I ended up watching the movie as well. And I think I think the movie flows really well. So,
yeah, I think, this is one of those places where I think the movie does work better, but even as the movie, I think when you leave the final, you know, shot, in the, the movie version, you are kind of left with, oh man, this does feel like it maybe needed something else to create the full version, because that episode just kind of ends, right, where he's riding off on the bike and that's it. And so it's like, I think that the movie version actually works better. But at the same time, by having the closure of the bookend, it felt like the episode actually had a better closure to it, you know? So it's just one of those things that I think is really interesting. But as you were talking, I was noticing that in my mind, what was coming into focus was really this idea that I think George was even coming to the ways in which he was going to start utilizing story arcs. So one, two, three, two, three episode story arcs, maybe even four in the Clone Wars. And those were going to be the ways in which, whole stories could be told in a little bit longer form. So you had more time to tell your story. And I think that's what he was kind of getting even here, right? Like that some of these stories, they actually needed more than just, one 45-minute episode to be told. And so I like that. I really appreciate, I think George just is somebody who learned to be malleable. And this is something that I think, current television could learn from. It's like you utilize the amount of time you need to tell the story for the story that you're telling in that episode. So do you need 45 minutes? Do you need 90 minutes? Do you need 32 minutes? Go with what your story actually needs, and utilize that, like, because especially these days with streaming television, you're not actually bound by time. And you can make your episodes as long or as short as you want. They just need to be then stories that legitimize the amount of time they're on screen.
Yeah, agreed completely. I your point is well taken. I think this is really where, he kind of got into this groove of using more story arcs to tell stories, like tell them in sets of twos and threes, and let the story breathe a little bit, let the characters breathe a little bit, and and the story will work itself out. It really will.
Yeah.
So
with this one, and you're talking about them together, what do you think you'd end up rating these episodes?
So I'm gonna cheat here. The first episode would be a 5 for me, and the second would be a 4. So I'm gonna split it down the middle and go with a 4.5. If I put them together as a movie, so.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. I think both of the episodes, I would probably go the exact same way. I don't think I have any difference in that. I think that they play better together, and so it all together, it's like a 4.5. I think the only thing that's needed is possibly just the stronger ending to the second episode when it's placed with the first episode in the movie.
I think it's its defense. I think there's a little bit of George kind of thematically storytelling by Indy being on the motorcycle. He's hoping you'll remember that Indy in another month will be riding a motorcycle for the French army to be a courier. So I think it's kind of like a foretelling of what's gonna come down the road for Indy. But it is kind of weak in that regard though.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to continue this. I love revisiting this show. I think it's just absolutely been a blast for me to be able to watch this show for the first time. And as I keep mentioning in many of these episodes, I am reminded every episode of just how stunned I am by what you can do with the drive to make a great looking show. And, you know, we know, you know, Lucas did spend money on this show, but he wasn't breaking the bank. You know, he wasn't putting himself into financial ruin doing this, but he was putting a lot of money behind something he really cared about. And they found a way to make it look stunning. And the fact that it still looks that way, even just watching a DVD copy, is phenomenal. So I'm really looking forward to diving back in with the next episode. But Yancey, if people wanted to catch up with you, of course, where would they find you?
Well, on social media, most of the time my handle is Galandro1, GALLANDRO1. That is a reference to the Brian Daley Han Solo novels. That's been my handle like forever. If you look me up on Facebook, I'm under my name, Yancey Evans. That's generally where I'm hanging out. You can hit me up. My DMs are always open. Just, you know, hey, let's talk.
Yeah, you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02. Of course, here in the 602 Club, talking all the things outside of Star Trek that we love and outside, of course, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. So check all that out. Of course, a lot of great Star Trek talk with my good friend Chris Jones. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network, a couple of shows. One's called Outpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But as always, thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back next year.